Okay, so this book is called Critical Semiotics, subtitled Theory, From Information to Affect. To Affect. Theory, From Information to Affect, by Gary Ganosko, a Canadian. He's in the media ecology world. He's written a book on Baudrillard, done stuff on McLuhan in relation to Baudrillard. So in 2016, this book was published by Bloomsbury Academic, which I wonder if that's in England. Yeah, and it's in London and New York, the publishing. So finding a lot of stuff in here to validate what I've been saying. Now, critical semiotics, there, if you look on my chart in the Thompson Quadrant, you'll see semiology. And that refers to a new discipline that was invented in linguistics about 100 or more years ago. What?
Semiology, isn't that to do with signs, Bob?
Yeah, the study of signs, which we might say the study of media. McLuhan would say media. Okay. But they tend to be nominalistic, so they separate signs from objects, which is what McLuhan didn't do. McLuhan knew why people did that. They're biased, but he preferred the bias of the rhetorical or grammatical approach, where the words are appropriate to the objects they describe. Nominalism says it doesn't matter what the word is. The object and the words don't really have much connection. It's arbitrary. Whereas, you know, native cultures, they don't name the child until they figure out what the child is, and then they get the appropriate name. Yeah. So the child evokes the name. Well, literate people, at least of one type of literacy, feel separate from the environment. So words don't affect what they describe. So the Eskimo or Inuit says, how can I know stone without the word stone? Well, the nominalist would say, I can know stone regardless of what you call it. You can call it a tree or Michael or any terms. So that attitude led to calling media signs. It's kind of a bit detached, visual bias, mm-hmm. at least how you think of the word sign. It may not have been what this French guy, De Saussure, that's his name, S-A-U-S-S-U-R-E, with a D-E in front of it, De Saussure. So he invents this discipline, I think it's called there's a whole school of academic training in and around semiotics and semiology. In this book, Gary Ganosko's book, titled Critical Semiotics, he's looking at different famous guys the last 30, 40 years and their relationship to semiology. So this usually they are trying to diminish semiology. So he calls them semioticians, engaged in semiotics. And it's critical. In general, if you look up in the dictionary, semiotics means the same thing as semiology. Maybe these divisions are just temporary academic, what do they call it, hair splitting. But the title, Critical Semiotics, means there are these guys who are experts in semiology, read the stuff, and are critical of it. So these are called Critical Semiotics. That's the name of the book. So it's a gathering together of different thinkers as like a union leader. Gary Ganosko is the union leader, and he's going to find all the scattered scholars who don't like semiotics or semiology. And they're going to present essays criticizing the biases of De Saussure and other linguists or structuralists. There's another term, structuralists. So in this book, there's the binary or dialectic between the symbolic semiologicians or the symbolic semiologies versus the critical semiotics, in particular the a-signifying semiotics. So there's signifying coming out of semiology in De Saussure, where he discusses the signifier and the signified. This is how you describe communication about objects. There's a relationship between the signifier and the signified. So without getting into the jargon and the meaning, some of the modern, more postmodern guys started to notice, well, there's more than signifying going on, or signifying is not happening anymore, like a post-information society, or hyper-making in a tactile society, so nobody can say what the references are, or what the rules are about nouns and objects. So we just like you have the word amoral, that means no morals involved, there's no signifying anymore in terms of semiotics and semiology. So we're looking at a-signifying, like amoral. So these critical guys engaged in critical semiotics are noticing the a-signifying aspect of structuralism. And linguistics, as this show sure laid out the rules for it, for that study. So I'm going to read you different descriptions of the new digital environment as opposed to analog. Maybe the analog phase, first half of the 20th century, is semiology, and there's a signifier and signified, a signifier and signified situation where those terms apply, and there's still a simpler communication media world. But when you get into the digital world, 70s, 80s, 90s, it becomes a strange a-signifying situation, much like when I described the Android meme as not an extension of humans, it's an extension of other machines, and they are not talking to you, they are talking to themselves, the parts of the machine. Now, Gary Ganosko's term for the Android meme is the machinic phylum, P-H-Y-L-U-M. The machinic phylum is used here when I quoted, think of what I call the Android meme. So you have Jean Baudrillard, Michel Foucault, Jean-Francois Lyotard, Félix Guattari. There's four: Guattari, Baudrillard, Foucault, and Lyotard, and some newer, not so well-known guys. These are the critical semioticians. And they're going to emphasize the strange new post-analog communication world we're in, or the a-signifying world. So
is this something that Roxy's made a video of with you, Bob?
No.
Is there a supporting video?
No, not yet. There may be soon, but I just read the book. I know Gary Ganosko. And I was interested in what he had done. I've read other books by him, earlier books. So I got this book. I didn't know what it would be about. And I'm not a professional semiotician or semiologist. I know about the discipline. I've heard a few lectures on it. I haven't read many of the books. But I've read some. Croker goes into it. Croker uses the jargon, signifier and signified. And, okay, don't make too much noises, guys. So that was Anne.
Bob.
Anne was just there, and she just left. Okay. But maybe it was you, Michael, too. So Croker uses language, but he's critical of the jargon, of the meanings of it. It's sort of obsolete from... Now, we have two meanings of obsolete. Something can be obsolete in the normal sense, that people, like, don't use it anymore. But McLuhan's meaning for obsolescence is that more and more people are using something. And so since so much, and the reason they're being used by so many people, it's pretty simple and straightforward, and it doesn't upset the sensibilities of people. It's not a new environment causing unforeseen effects. Nick just dropped off. Maybe he'll be back.
Bob, can you say that's due to almost like the extension of it and... That's how it goes numb. So it's obsolete now. You don't feel it or notice it anymore. You're so used to it.
Yes, that would be a description of... That would be a way to define obsolescence. You're numb to it. It's not startling. It's not new and odd.
But because of the abundance of it, there's so much of it, it's...
Yeah,
it's been
numb.
Overpopular. Yeah. Okay.
Now, you get a new technology comes in, you might notice the new technology, but you don't know what the effects are unless you know how to study it. You don't know what it's going to do to the older society, which is the medium that's already there. So you look to the what's happening in the older media to see what the new media is doing. Yeah, Nick's back. Okay, so I'll unmute him. So so note when we use the word obsolescence, be careful and define how you mean it, the McLuhan way or the normal way. So what was I just saying about Gnosko? So he's gathered together those not impressed with structuralism. One of the first thinkers in this post-structuralism world was Derrida, D-E-R-R-I-D-A. Gnosko doesn't mention him that much, but he's in the book because he's one of the first he's a critical structuralist. He created the term deconstructing and post-structuralism. So if we look at the analog phase of media as structuralism and semiology, then the digital world evokes new thinkers who are post-semiology, and they are critical of the situation. So they're critical semiotics. What they make is critical semiotics. So let's go into, I'm going to go through different descriptions of what I call the Android meme to get a clue on the effects of the Android meme as registered in the older schools of structuralism and semiology. Okay, look at this. On page 3, in the introduction where Gnosko reviews the main themes in each chapter, he says, this strategy gets us thinking about what Eugene Thacker calls a world without us. That's the quote. A world without us. A world beyond human subjecthood or normal cognition and beyond meaning making. Most people don't know how to make meaning today. A world of proto-enunciation, animistic powers, that's animism, and even magic. So that's a pretty good beginning point of what the Android meme is in rearview mirror categories. It's a world that's without us, a world beyond human subjecthood and meaning-making, a world of proto-enunciation, animistic powers, and even magic. It's like we've gone back to the original conditions. Pre-media, remember I was saying we're pre-human, pre-media at the dawn of culture-making, or making symbolic systems of information. So then, on the same page, page 3, I have another section outlined about what the Android meme is doing. These words are applied to a particular topic, but I'm taking the words out of the book because they're useful to explaining what I mean and what this book means by a signifying. So in our present world, meaning is not irrelevant, and its periodic refluxes, decenterings, and speculative theories about the vacuoles, those are little parts of cells, of non-meaning, speculative theories about the vacuoles of non-meaning that inhabit it, bring into focus the contributions of Roland Barthes, B-A-R-T-H-E-S, he's talked about in this book occasionally, but he's not a main guy, who, while representing a tradition grounded in a thoroughgoing linguistical semiology, so he comes out of structuralism, also attempted to theorize signifiers without signified. He's starting to, you know, adapt in the 60s to this new situation, and he tried to do a new kind of structuralism. And it says, his obtuse sign, that was the category he came up with, the obtuse sign. His obtuse sign hides his meaning and eludes fullness. It outmaneuvers meaning to achieve inarticulateness, which may still be surprisingly effectual. So we're getting into the post-articulation, the inarticulate, for most people, Android meme world. Okay? You see what I'm doing?
Yeah.
So that's page 3. That's some early simple, useful phrases. Hey, Alyssa's not here. She's missing out on this. Hope she catches it later. So then we go to page 21. And here's a description, talking about the thinker Felix Guattari in the first essay, which is called Information Theory to Guattari's A-Signifying Semiotics. Information theory is what Norbert Wiener, Shannon, and another guy named Weaver were creating with that book, Cybernetics. We were talking about 1948 that Don Thiel gave to McLuhan. So the late 40s, they're thinking about meaning and signifiers and signified in the new radio environment, the new media world. They're almost like, they're part of MIT. They're almost part of the intelligence world. But they're the inventors of some of this technology. So they created something called information theory. So Guattari is not going to have the limitations of Weaver, and Shannon's early information theory. So what he does, it says here on page 21, Guattari actively decenters enunciation, that's like speaking clearly, from the human subject to machinic non-human assemblages of proto-enunciation. Not sure what proto-enunciation is other than enunciating in a new way, just as McLuhan says, slang is an attempt to enunciate the new effects, so it's you have to make up weird words for the new effects. So Guattari actively decenters enunciation from the human subject to, moves it toward machinic non-human assemblages of a proto-enunciation. Maybe it's the beginning enunciation of the Android meme. So he decenters human subjectivity for the sake of machinic proto-subjectifications. That is one of the broad theoretical goals of Guattari's philosophy. Decentering human subjectivity for the sake of pointing out a new kind of subjectivity that the machine gives to the human.
Yeah, I totally heard the Android meme in that.
In what I just said, right, good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So that's page 21. I go back to my notes to see what the next page is, 29. Page 29. Okay, so starting at page, bottom of page 28, talking first, they come up with the term part signs. From semiology, structuralism, semiotics had signs, signifiers, signified, and sliding. So Guattari comes up with part signs. I think it was him. So here's a description of our world. The you go to the ATM machine with your magnetic card and swipe the machine to get your data or money. So they're talking about what kind of communication is going on in the ATM machine. How was it created? What did the technician scientists use? So he says, talking about pins and passwords, whether they are randomly generated or carefully selected on the basis of paradigmatic clusters of birth dates, children's ages, former addresses, initials, nicknames, etc., pins/passwords, come on now, don't make any noise, don't move, pins, passwords, like the mag-striped reader encoding-decoding relation, can do without mental representations, which may, of course, exist, but they are not essential and no longer center signification. Passwords just allow one to pass through the gates. So humans are interacting with this, so the things are communicating with us. What is the communication? It's not verbal anymore. So they're trying to discuss what this machinic form of communication is. So then the next paragraph is, there's a tendency in the information age for A-signifying semiotics to maximize its machinic force, to rapidly evolve, speed up, acquire greater mobility, miniaturize, and proliferate. In A-signifying semiotics, particle signs work flush with the real, flush is in quotes, real is in quotes, or more precisely, with material fluxes. Guattari does not, however, uncritically valorize flushness as directness. At the same level as and in parallel with are better ways to put it. So rather than being flush with reality, it's at the same level as or in parallel with. So then,
Bob, did you say particle signs?
Yeah, particle signs, also
okay.
Part signs. The words, because Guattari starts discussing the role of the molecule, and like discarnate man is a molecule. McLuhan called it just subatomic.
Sure.
So particles, you're parts of the molecule of your existence, your chip body existence, say. So it can be a part sign or a particle sign if you bring in molecular chemistry.
So the pen or the password as a part sign,
yeah,
is no longer the center of the...
Your names, your subjectivity, your where you are. Your normal chemical body perception is totally decentered when you have.
It doesn't symbolize. It doesn't have meaning like a symbol.
The terms the chemical body uses don't apply to the terms that electrical interaction is doing, or electronic interaction, or digital interaction, whatever you call the communication of software.
Bob, that paragraph and those last few words you said triggered an idea about what proto Cygnus, what does he call it? Proto enunciation.
Yeah, enunciation, right.
So that's the machines that flash a light or make a beep. They signal you. That's how they talk to you.
Yeah. You know, that's a line from Finnegan's Wake that McLuhan quotes, where flash becomes sound. They're speaking to you. You know, you might sub-vocalize what the beeping thing means to you. You don't speak back to it, but it evokes some words in your mind. That's where flash...
Yeah, and it evokes a behavior. You know, you go when the light turns green.
Yeah. Now, an interesting side thing is he has a chapter at the beginning on page 25 on sign dust. Now, Zappa considered some of his later work with the synclavier, his digital music creation, he called it digital dust. I wonder if he had seen this term, sign dust. I don't know where this first showed up. Maybe Guattari invented the term, but I just find it interesting, sign dust. And then it talks later about smart dust. The digital camera has a sensor. Smart dust, instead of random specks of dust that stick to a digital camera's sensor, a tiny system of micro-electromechanical devices communicating wirelessly clean the sensor of interfering materials. That's smart dust. So now, occasionally, he will say something, write something, and I say, that's ionic. Here's a sentence by Brian Masumi. It transcends itself back into the immanence out of which it came. Immanence means pervasiveness. So ion is non-physical. It's pervasive in us. And so when ion came forth, it transcended itself back into the immanence out of which it came. Or this describes humans when they get into the chip body. We transcend ourselves back into the immanence out of which we came.
Wow.
Then, later, they're talking about an alien cosmogenesis in combination with the fluids derived from dead seas and dust storms, in brackets, various hay boobs. That's where the hey boobs, page 26 is where that word is, hey boobs.
Hey, Bob.
And that's out of the Mediterranean, you know, Dead Seas of Galilee, the biblical areas, the Muslim area, the Jewish area. The seeding of otherworldly building processes not only tangles the root elements, but also intervenes in an established pattern by means of outsider impositions. Look at ion as an alien cosmogenesis. In combination with the fluids, our products are fluids, derived from dead seas and dust storms. In the Genesis section of the Book of Revelation, ion talks about, in that series, he talks about dust as the original first phase of non-physical, I think it was. So anyways, the seeding of, quote, otherworldly building process, the seeding of otherworldly, could be a pun on otherworldly, building processes not only tangles the root elements, but also intervenes in an established pattern by means of outsider impositions. Alien liquidities are not so alien to ritual events such as weddings, when the couple is showered in confetti. And in the circus, clown acts involving confetti hidden in what appear to be water pails are a source of humor and amusement, especially when tossed at an audience anticipating a soaking. Shredded and punched papers have a long history in public celebrations and are described in liquid terms as showers, streams, and even flurries of ticker tape falling on otherwise dry urban parade routes. Then Gnosko says, inflected by, and names the guy, Negarestani, inflected by Negarestani's hypothesis that a radical cosmogenesis occurs when alien liquidities combine with basic elements. So that's a gathering of interesting words that I could apply to ion. Then a little further down in this paragraph on page 27, the collision course of micro-machinisms, they're not mechanical machines, they're organic electronic living machines. That's machinic as opposed to machine. The collision course of micro-machinisms with dust, so these micro-machinisms collide with dust, announces the need for future semiotics adapted to digitization, miniaturization, and other forces of the post-media era. The control of such devices... Yep?
Well, where do the CERN cookie crumbs and the hanging chads fit in with the dust theme?
The cookie crumbs are cultural signs, leftovers of people who actually knew what they were doing with the ascending process. So you have religious symbolism, cult symbolism, are fragments of the actual knowledge. And the actual knowledge would not use symbols, because they know what they're doing. They just make the processes chemically or other forces. So we would not relate to whatever you said. What was it? What are the nouns you said?
Well, basically you're saying they're not relevant here.
Yeah, could you say them again?
The cookie crumbs that were left at CERN and the hanging chads. And how do those relate to dust? I mean, they both seem, they're like an image of particles and some sort of disruptive force.
Okay, that's dust. That's not smart dust, but it's dust. It could be digital dust. But I don't know. They might be part of the disservices of the digital glitches. I think hanging chads were actual voting paper. That got
they were. They were.
Right. So that's paper. That's got nothing to do with this. But the other thing you're talking about, which was what? Chads and something else.
Cookie crumbs.
Oh, cookie crumbs. Yeah, those things left in the CERN, I don't know what they are. They had something to do with me.
Nothing to do with you, Bob.
No, I said it had something. Ian says it had something to do with me. I was eating something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it got in the machine. But that's not healthy for the McLuhanites to know that, so we won't bring up that kind of talk here.
Sorry.
Even though we just did. But let's just get this sentence. The collision course of micro-machinisms with dust announces the need for future semiotics adapted to digitization, miniaturization, and other forces of the post-media era. Post-analog media era. The control of such devices would not be, for Guattari, a foregone conclusion in favor of the military or industry, because the mobilization of molecular potentiality cannot be decided in advance. So, if you think Trump is a useful phenomenon, then it was not predicted. Unless you got the occasional funny novel or something. But that Trump as a liberator of something in the Android meme was not stopped by the military or industry. And so it represents potential for people or molecules. So he calls it molecular potentiality. So the control of these digital environments, which Ion said that chip landscape couldn't be controlled, that's why they came forth. So the control of such devices for digitization, miniaturization, and other forces of the post-media era would not be, for Felix Guattari, a foregone conclusion in favor of the military industry, because the mobilization of molecular potentiality, that's you, cannot be decided in advance. So I made a note, that's Ionic ideology. That's what Ion is celebrating, the freedom that people have today. Can't be controlled by the old establishment. So Ion is working out a future semiotics, and Gary Ganosko is trying to get together these guys, these ideas, to form a future semiotics that's more appropriate to our time, to the post-media era. Okay, so then, that's page 27. A little bit of 26 and 27. And the Hey Boobs was on page 26. So then you go to page 28. Yeah, 28 going into 29. Another description of the Android meme. There is a tendency in the information age for A-signifying semiotics to maximize its machinic force, to rapidly evolve, speed up, acquire greater mobility, miniaturize, and proliferate. Now, this is what I read before. In A-signifying semiotics, particle signs work flush with the real, or more precisely, with material fluxes. Guattari does not, however, uncritically valorize flushness as directness. It should be at the same level as, and or in parallel with, are better ways to put it. Now, I reread that because we're going to get into some descriptions which gets into the immaterial part of the data universe. The mixing up of what's material and immaterial, which is definitely what Ion talks about, and McLuhan. The concepts of what's matter and what isn't is getting obscured by digital technology. So Guattari, Felix Guattari, this chapter, chapter one, is trying to find out new ways to be a semiotician or a semiologician or to engage semiology or structuralism. So he started making diagrams, which I have not looked at his books to see. I don't know about these. I have not seen the diagrammatism. Diagrammatism in Guattari's hands, but remember, I made a diagram. Diagrammatism in Guattari's hands blazes a trail beyond the human and individuated subject of the statement into the collective machinic dimension, which are escapees from the prison house of meaning. So you guys are escapees from the prison house of meaning. So reading it again, diagrammatism in Guattari's hand. See, I haven't read their two early books in detail. I've looked at them, but I'm not an expert on them. I always saw these guys as redoing McLuhan and Fitting His Wake, which is my point I'm going to eventually get to. But we're going to lay out what Gary's saying here first. Diagrammatism in Guattari's hand blazes. Okay, Shah, you can't be moving around, Shah. Take a break. Well, I'm going to mute you for a while, Shah. You're making noises. Okay. Diagrammatism in Guattari's hands blazes a trail beyond the human, an individuated subject of the statement, that's a product of older media, into the collective machinic dimension, which is made up of escapees from the prison house of meaning. Okay. Let's see. Where hierarchies, like those of reifying denotation and imaginary connotation are blurred. On this plane are found events that are individuated and singular. It is devoid of formed substances. There's no substance there. And is neither anchored to subjects nor organized by imposed strata. With A-signifying semiotics, one enters the plane of the post-human, more and more artificial. Guattari didn't shed any humanist tears over those ill-adapted to such change, rejecting anti-modern and anti-machine recapitulations of humanism. Those are guys attempting to bring this Android meme back into some literate human scale is futile. So that was page 29. Hierarchies, reifying denotation, and imaginary connotation are blurred. There's some kind of machinic individuation and singularity being created in the subjects. and it's devoid of form substances, and neither anchored to subject nor organized by imposed strata. Okay, so then the next page, we would go to 31. Here is a description of A signifying diagrammatic semiotics done by Guattari. And they're always talking about, these are ex-communists, these guys, a lot of them, ex-anarchists.
What era was Guattari?
In the 60s, 70s, he died in 95. He's a psychiatrist. And he had weird clinics, and he co-wrote a few books with a famous French philosopher named Deleuze, D-E-L-E-U-Z-E. So Deleuze lived, Guattari died in 95, and Deleuze is more famous now because he lived longer and wrote more. But these are things written in the 70s. A signifying, okay. This is after McLuhan's fame, A signifying diagrammatic semiotics says this, describing the very texture of the capitalist word, of the capitalist world, A signifying machines recognize neither subjects, nor persons, nor roles, and not even delimited objects. So the Android meme ain't noticing you. That is precisely what confers upon them, these A-signifying machines, a kind of omnipotence. They pass through signifying systems, that signifier and signify, the old structuralism terms, within which individuated subjects find themselves lost and alienated. One never knows when or where capitalism ends. And this is where Jean, studying Marxist stuff back then, didn't know where it got obsolete or where it remained relevant. Right, Jean?
Yes.
Yeah. And you didn't know these guys, they're in your Marxist world, were working it out, trying to.
Correct. Not at all. Totally. That was the gap in my education. Big time.
Yeah, so A-signifying semiotics are perfectly adapted to the network of banking systems we use on a regular basis. Let's just leave that. Okay, and then you go to page 31. Then you get to page 32 where Gnosko used the word machinic phylum. And he gets into semio-capitalism, which would be the software communism that McLuhan talks about, the information highway, the information world, the data overflow, and how business digitizes its profit-making within that. It's called semio-capitalism. So it engages in info-commodity. Info-commodities is what's sold in semio-capitalism. Capitalism. So listen to this. Simply put, an info commodity under semio-capitalism consists in a non-exclusive way of A signifying particle signs whose production and passage through digital networks contribute to the development of the machinic phylum, Android meme, which is, for Guattari, the creative historical force of, quote, selection, elimination, and generation of machines by machines. Remember how I defined that the Android meme is machines extending machines. So start to get that here.
Yes.
Then it gets into the problem of when people sit at computer terminals and process data, that's work, but it's not your traditional factory work. So they're trying to figure out what the hell is immaterial labor. How do you deal with unions in that situation? So these guys are also, as communists, ex-communists, are trying to help the working people. So we then go to page, that was 31 and 32. Basically, I just read 32. Then we go to 33, and here's some more words that I think points to the Android meme. Roland Barthes writes the word construction. And then Gnosco says, it is the conception of final step as first new step. Myth capitalizes on semiological patterns and uses them as raw materials to erect a politics marked by a sly disavowal of ideology, what Barth called depoliticized speech. So if the Android meme is televising political campaigns and politicians apparently addressing you, and that's not really the situation, the Android meme has begun to not talk to you, then it will start to slyly disavow ideology and bring in depoliticized speech. So then, that's Barth. He's not as up to date, but he's talking about mythologies and modern media and communication. So he comes up with this idea that myth, which would be popular culture, say the Eiffel Tower as a mythic, you know, Parisian scenario, myth capitalizes on semiological patterns and uses them as raw materials to erect a politics marked by a sly disavowal of ideology, what Barth called depoliticized speech. You could say the content of political campaigns are like mythologies. And this is quoting from a book called Mythologies that Barth did in 1957 after reading McLuhan's Mechanical Bride. So he's influenced by McLuhan. Can you guys hear the kitchen water going? Version.
No.
Good. Now here, talking about...
Bob, will you just... Sorry, Bob, will you just say that last bit again? Myth capitalizes on... I just didn't get the last bit.
Yeah, myth... capitalizes on semiological patterns or signs and uses them as raw materials to erect a politics marked by a sly disavowal of ideology. In other words, depoliticized speech. And then a little later, talking about the digital situation, some of the effects of the Android meme are listed in these words. There's residues of signification, dregs and remainders, and they accumulate in the collapse of signifying redundancies, implosions of separated strata or strata, collectivization of individuated human consciousnesses, and multiplication of double articulations, stalling this colonizing semi-linguistic machine. So I don't think you should get all that, but I'm just showing the way they pile up the words to describe this new situation. As destratification...
Bob, I didn't get all of that, but are they saying in the sentence before that, hang on. Oh, it's left me. Oh, so the language gets depoliticized. There's a sly disavowal of ideology. Is that just because, like, people on the campaign, or whenever you speak in public, you're actually talking to everyone. You're not talking to your self-selected audience.
Yeah, that's right.
So that, you have to not offend anyone, so you end up not saying anything.
So we end up with political correctness.
Yeah.
And that's what McLuhan wrote.
Or, yeah, like disavowal of any ideology.
Right. And McLuhan said that Sirhan, who killed Senator Robert Kennedy in 1968, McLuhan used as an example that Senator Kennedy didn't know that he was talking to the whole Arab world when he was defending Israel or whatever political Israeli kind of statement he was making about the beginning of, you know, dissatisfaction in Palestine and all that. He didn't know that they would take his words personally and kill him.
Yeah.
If you believe Sirhan, this is on the surface level that Sirhan did that for the Arab cause. So, yeah, that's an example of a politician, McLuhan pointed out, didn't know he was talking to the whole world. He just thought he was talking to maybe some a Jewish organization or something. And people were oblivious to the fact they were discarnate and broadcasting globally. Just didn't see it yet. This is talking about the end of structural signifiers and signified, normal, logical, communicating signs. So it leads to a bunch of garbage, residues of signification. And they could
like tweeting.
No, that's a signifying semiotics. That's not signifying. There could be, you could apply it, but we're talking about what you normally think is normal communication, how it's being blown apart.
That was my point. You're not signifying anymore.
Well, I don't know.
I'm totally misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's human communication. We're talking about the communication between machines, the digital signaling, the electronic processing. Not English, not words.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I thought we were also looking at, see, that's harder for me to conceptualize, but I thought we were also looking at the general effect.
On older media, yes, older media. So twittering is an updating of signifying, where it's acronyms and 24-word limit, whatever it is, all those new rules on it, on Twitter communication, is an effect caused by the new digital asignifying environment on an older medium, which is registered as the content of Twitter's, of Twittering.
Yeah, is Twitter part signs?
Yeah, this whole thing that people don't communicate, even Ayn goes into it. These kids don't do normal human literate or even tribal communication. They are responding to a new invisible environment that's making their use of old media become strange. So he says, you end up with residues of signification, that's old media, and they accumulate in the collapse of signifying redundancies, implosions of separated strata, collectivization of individuated human consciousnesses. There's no human consciousness individuated anymore. And a multiplication of double articulations, stalling this colonizing semiolinguistic machine. The digital machine is colonizing your old skull, your old chemical head. Bill, we're not going to, I think we'll go on for another hour. I got a lot of quotes, so we're just starting. So. No ending of show, Bill. Okay, you guys can stay, some of you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Try.
Yes. Yes, yes.
I want to pile up these quotes. Okay, panic button. Okay, Bill says okay. All right, so what were you going to say, Sean?
I'm going to stay, Bob.
Oh, okay.
You stay another hour.
So the hierarchies of normal language, Madeline, you know, this means that, and that means this, and this, and the order, the logical order of language, it goes, that's a kind of hierarchical strata. So you have a de-stratification. So he says, as de-stratification of older media picks up speed and frees up more intensive processes, think of the drama of cognition being speeded up, raw material for a-signifying semiotics is generated. This raw material, once assembled, in brackets, self-organized and or machined, is none other than the particle signs that a-signifying machining processes make use of. Hence, Gnoska says, my use of the term sign dust. Then he quotes Guattari. Consequently, these territorial residues reorganize themselves into a-signifying particles. They will provide raw material for a-signifying semiotic machines beyond the reach of the impotentiating advances of reflexive consciousness. So reflexive consciousness becomes impotent. And these machines are beyond the reach of your impotent thinking.
This is all the data then, the statistics on everyone.
Yes, and everything
machines
else.
Are passing around. Yeah.
You're still thinking of yourself as the content of it. It's the other, your chemical body and the data.
I am.
Yeah. Remember, you're not the majority of content. This is highly technical, whatever the fucking things are doing in the fiber optic cables and through the satellites and through this machine and that machine. Like, what the fuck is it? Right? There's
they're
a lot of communication.
Talking about something. Yeah, there's all this communication. I have no idea what they're saying to each other. It doesn't even have anything to do with me. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and that's what Norbert Wiener and Weaver and Shannon, Claude Shannon, I think his name was, they were known as the Shannon-Weaver, hyphenated, Shannon-Weaver model. They were trying to figure out what to call the new technologies they were making at the MIT and other labs in the 40s and 50s. They were trying to describe how do we improve the effectiveness of signaling and stuff like that, you know. And so they detached meaning. This book begins with how they said, we can't use meaning when we're discussing this information highway. We got to use other things. And so they had to start talking about, you know, signifier and signified. Very dry, boring reading if you actually read the stuff. But they were trying to figure...
I guess my question is, why are they interested? Like, why would you concern yourself with that? And I guess...
Well, they were trying to make sure the machines... They want the machines to work, and they needed a language to describe what they were making. So,
because they realize that we have a tendency to anthropomorphize them, and we need to.
No, they weren't looking at effects. They weren't looking at effects. They're just trying to improve the signal to noise ratio, is what they called it. Just saying that should mean something to you.
To make their communication more streamlined somehow, to work better.
No, just so that you could hear it. Yeah, so that it would register accurately from the sender to the receiver.
Wait, so who can hear it?
Other machines or humans. No difference. See, they call it senders and receivers. So
okay.
they were starting to deal with the